Smoke touched base with as many small ranchers and farmers as he could that day, then slowly turned Drifter's head toward the town of Fontana. There was no bravado in what he was about to do, no sense of being a martyr. The area had to be checked out, and Smoke was the most likely candidate to do that. But even he was not prepared for the sight that greeted him. Long before he topped the crest overlooking the town of Fontana, he could see the lights. Long before the rip-roaring town came into view, he could hear the noise. Smoke topped the crest and sat, looking with amazement at the sight that lay beneath and before him. Fontana had literally burst at the seams, growing in all directions within 3 days. From where he sat, Smoke could count 50 new saloons, most no more than hurriedly erected wooden frames covered with canvas. The town had spread a half mile out in any direction, and the streets were packed with shoulder-to-shoulder humanity.
Come on, Drifter. Let's see what Fontana has to offer us.
Smoke stabled Drifter in the oldest of the corrals. A dozen had suddenly burst forth around the area, and he filled the trough with corn.
Boy?
Yes, sir?
Stay away from that horse. If anyone but me goes into that stall, he'll kill him.
Yes, sir. You really the gunfighter, Smoke Jensen?
Yeah.
I'm on your side, Mr. Smoke. Name's Billy.
Smoke extended his hand, and the boy gravely shook it. Smoke studied the boy in the dim lantern light of the stable. He had ragged clothes and shoes with the soles tied so that they would not flop.
How old are you, Billy?
11, sir.
Where are your folks?
Dead for more years than I can remember.
I don't recall seeing you before. You been here long?
No, sir. I come in a couple weeks ago. I've been staying down south of here, working in a stable. But the man who owned it married Emma Grass' widow, and her kids took over my job. I drifted. Old Grump that owns this place give me a job. I sleep here.
Smoke handed the boy a double eagle.
Come light. You get yourself some clothes and shoes.
$20? Wow! Thanks, Mr. Smoke.
Smoke led the boy to Drifter's stall and opened the gate, stepping inside.
Come on in, Billy.
But you said...
It's okay. Come on in. Pet him.
Billy cautiously petted the midnight black stallion.
He likes you. You'll be all right with him. Anyone comes in here and tries to hurt you, just get in the stall with Drifter. You won't be harmed.
Yes, sir. You be careful, Mr. Smoke. I don't say much to people, but I listen real good. I hear things.
They walked to the wide doors at the front of the stable.
What do you hear, Billy?
Some guy named of Monty Carson is going to be elected the sheriff. Ain't no one running against him.
I've heard of him. He's a good hand with a gun.
Better than you?
No.
Boss of this area, that Mr. Tilden Franklin, supposed to have a bunch of gun hands coming to be deputies.
Who are they?
I ain't heard.
What have you heard about me?
I heard two punchers talking yesterday afternoon over by a tent saloon. Circle TF punchers. But I think they're more than just cowboys. They wore their guns low and tied down. If they can angle you in for a back shoot, they'd do it. Talk is, though, this Mr. Franklin is gonna let the law handle you. Legal-like, you know?
Yeah? You take care of Drifter, Billy. Keep your ears clean and open. I'll check you later.
Yes, sir, Mr. Smoke.
Smoke stepped out of the stable and turned to his left. His right hand slipped the thong off the Colt's hammer. Smoke was dressed in black whipcord trousers, black shirt, and dark hat. He headed for the short boardwalk that ran in front of Beaker's General Store, a saloon, and the gunsmith shop. Smoke's eyes were in constant motion, noting and retaining everything he had spotted. Night seemed to color into day as he approached the Boomtown area. Smoke walked past Beaker's store and glanced in. The man had hired more help and was doing a land office business, a fixed smile on his greedy weasel face. His hatchet-faced wife was in constant motion, moving around the brightly lighted store, her sharp eyes darting left and right and looking for thieving hands. Other than her own, of course. Smoke walked on, coming to the swinging doors of the saloon. Now, the miners as a whole were not bad people. They were here to dig and chip and blast and hammer and rock, looking for gold. In the free time, most would drink and gamble and whore the night away. He crossed the street and stepped into Louis Longmont's place. The faro and money and draw and stud poker tables were filled. Those with money in their hands stared and waited for Lady Luck to smile on them. Most of the time, she did not. Smoke walked to the bar, shoved his way through, and got a beer. He took his beer and crossed the room, dodging drunks as they staggered past. He leaned against a bracing and watched the action.
Smoke!
Louis Longmont. Another year, another boontown, eh?
They never change. I don't know why I stay with it. I certainly don't need the money.
Smoke knew that was no exaggeration on the gambler's part. That gambler owned a large ranch up in Wyoming territory. He owned several businesses in San Francisco, and he owned a hefty chunk of a railroad. It was a mystery to many why Louis stayed with the hard life he had chosen.
Then get out of it, Louis.
Oh, but of course. Just as you got out of gunfighting.
I put him away for several years, Louis. Had gold not been found, or had I chosen a different part of the country to settle, I probably would never have picked him up again.
Lying to others is bad enough, my young friend, but lying to oneself is unconscionable. Can you look at me and tell me you never, during those stale years, missed the dry-mouthed moment before the draw? The challenge of facing and besting those miscreants who would kill you or others who seek a better and more peaceful way? The so-called loneliness of the Hoot Owl Trail? I think not, Mr. Jensen. I think not.
There was nothing for Smoke to say. Because Louis was right. He had missed those death-close moments, and Sally knew it, too. Smoke had often caught her watching him, silently looking at him as he would stand and gaze toward the mountains, or as his eyes would follow the high flight of an eagle.
Your silence tells all, my friend. I know only too well.
Yeah, I guess I'd better finish my beer and ride. I don't want to be the cause of any trouble in your place, Louis.
Trouble, my friend, is something I have never shied away from. You're safer here than in any other place in this woe-begotten town. If I can help it, you will not be backshot in my place.
Again, Smoke knew the gambler was telling the truth. Smoke and Louis had crossed trails a dozen times over the years. The man had taken a liking to the boy when Smoke was riding with the mountain man Preacher. In the quieter moments of his profession, Louis had shown Smoke the tricks of his gambler's trade. Hearing the horses, Smoke looked at Louis.
About a dozen riders.
Probably the deputies Tilden Franklin called in from down Durango way. There'll be hard cases, Smoke.
Is this election legal?
Of course not. But it'll be months before the state can send anyone in to verify it or avoid it. By then, Franklin will have gotten his way. Initial reports show the gold, what there is of it, assays high, but the load is a narrow one.
I've known about the vein for a long time, Louis. I never wanted gold.
It is well and good to shun wealth while one is young, Smoke, but one had best not grow old without some wealth.
One can have wealth without riches, Louis.
I believe Preacher's influence was strong on you, young man.
There could have been no finer teacher in all the world, Louis, and I don't even know if he's alive or not. If he is, he'd be in his 80s. I'd like to think he's still with us, but I just don't know.
Louis knew, but he elected to remain silent on the subject, at least for the time being.
Word travels fast, Smoke.
It always does.
The first rider burst into the large tent.
I don't know him. You?
Unfortunately, yeah. He's one of Tilden's gun hands. Calls himself Tay. Ran into him when I was riding with Preacher. Back when he was known as Carter. I heard he was wanted for murder back in Arkansas.
Sounds like a delightful fellow.
He's a bully, but don't sell him short. He's hell with a shotgun.
Better than you, Smoke?
No one is better than me, Louis.
I believe I am better, my friend.
I hope we never have to test that out of anger, Louis.
We won't. But let's set up some cans and make a small wager someday.
You're on.
The gunfighter Tay turned slowly, his eyes drifting first to Louis, than to Smoke.
Hello, punk.
Are you speaking to me, you unshaven lout?
No, I'm talking to your pretty boy there.
The leather thongs that secured the man's guns were off, left and right.
You're a fool.
I'm gonna kill you for that.
I hope you have enough in your pockets to bury you.
Tay's face flushed, both hands hovering over the butts of his guns.
$100 on the Circle TF rider.
You're on. Gentlemen, bets are down.
Tay's eyes were shiny, but his hands were steady over his guns. Smoke held his beer mug in his left hand.
Oh, God damn you.
Please, after you. I always give a sucker a break whenever possible.
The single slug struck Tay in the center of the chest and knocked him backward. He struggled up now on one elbow and looked at Smoke through eyes that were already glazing over. He tried to lift his free, empty hand. The hand was so heavy he thought his gun was in it. He began squeezing his trigger finger. He was curious about the lack of noise and recoil.
Maybe we don't have to set up those tin cans.
Tie him across a saddle and take him back to Tilden Franklin. Unless some of you boys want to pick up where Tay left off.
The other riders appeared to be in a mild state of shock. They were all, to a man, used to violence. That was their chosen way of life. And they had all, to a man, been either witnesses to or participants in stand-up gunfights, backshoots, and ambushes. And they had all heard of the young gunslick Smoke Jensen. But since none had ever seen the man in action, they had tended to dismiss much of what they had heard as so much pumped-up hoopla. Until this early evening in the boom town of Fontana, in Lewis Longmont's gaming tent.
Yes, sir, Mr. Jensen. I'll sure tie him across the saddle.
Until this evening, the young TF rider had fancied himself a gun hawk. Now he just wanted to get on his pony and ride clear out of the area. But he was afraid the others would laugh at him if he did that. Smoke looked at the young puncher who had spoken.
Come here.
The young man, perhaps 20 at the most, quickly crossed the room to face Smoke. He was scared, and he looked it.
What's your name?
Pearly.
You're on the wrong side, Pearly. You know that?
Mr. Smoke, the TF brand can throw 200 or more men at you, and I ain't kidding. Now, you're tough as hell and snake quick, but even you can't fight that many men.
You want to bet your life, Pearly?
I ain't got no choice, Mr. Longmont.
Yes, you do.
I'm listening.
I need a hand I can trust. I think that's you, Pearly.
But I've been riding for the TF brand.
How much is he paying you?
60 a month.
I'll give you 30 and found.
You're serious?
Yeah, I am. Have you the sand to make a turnaround in your life?
Give me a chance, Mr. Smoke.
You got it. Are you quick with that Colt?
Yes, sir. They ain't near about as quick as you.
Have you ever used it before?
Yes, sir.
Would you stand by me and my wife and friends, Pearly?
Till I soak up so much lead I can't stand, Mr. Smoke.
Smoke cut his eyes at Lewis. The man smiled and nodded his head slightly.
You're hired, Pearly.
Ralph Morrow would not let up on his wife.
Your behavior the other day was disgusting. Those men are dead because of you. You do realize that, don't you?
Bountiful tossed her head, her blonde curls bouncing around her beautiful face. Her lips were set in a pout.
I did nothing.
My God, I married an animal! Can't you see you're a minister's wife?
I'm beginning to see a lot of things, Ralph, one of which is that I made a mistake.
In coming out west? Did we have a choice, Bountiful? After your disgraceful behavior in Ohio, I'm very lucky the church even gave me another chance.
No, Ralph, not that. In my marrying such a pompous ass.
You take that back.
You take that back? Oh my God, Ralph, you're such a flummox.
Merciful heaven!
Man and wife were several miles from the town of Fontana. They were on the banks of a small creek. Ralph sat down on the bank and refused to look at his wife. A short distance away, at their camp, the others tried without much success not to notice their friends quarreling.
They certainly are engaged in a plethora of flapdoodle.
I feel sorry for him.
I don't. It's his own fault he's such a sissy pants.
All present looked at Ed Jackson and the dancing flames of the fire. If there was a wimp among them, it was Ed. Ed had found a June bug in his blankets on the way west, and from his behavior, one might have thought he'd discovered a nest of rattlers. It had taken his wife a full 15 minutes to calm him down. Haywood sat on a log and puffed his meerschaum. Of all of them, Haywood was the only person who knew the true story about Ralph Morrow. And if the others wanted to think him a sissy pants, well, that was their mistake. But Haywood had to admit that, from all indications, when Ralph had fully accepted Christ into his life, he had gone a tad overboard. If anyone had taken the time to just look at Ralph, they would have noticed the rippling boxer's muscles, the broad, hard, flat-knuckled fists, the slightly crooked nose. It had always amazed Haywood how so many people could look at something but never see it. Sure, Ralph did sort of act like a big milk toast, but it was going to be interesting when Ralph finally got a belly full of it.
Pearly did what?
Clint was no gun hawk. He was as good or better with a shotgun than most men, but he had never fancied himself a gunfighter. He knew horses, he knew cattle, and he could work and manage men. There was no backup in Clint. He'd fought Injuns, outlaws, nesters, and other ranchers during his years with Tilden Franklin. And while he didn't always approve of everything Tilden did, Clint rode for the brand. And that was that.
He quit. He's working for Smoke now. Made a good offer, supposedly.
That goddamn no good little pup. Well, this can't be tolerated, Clint.
No, sir. You're right.
Drag him.
Lewis shut the gaming room down early that evening, and with Lewis Longmont, no one uttered any words of protest. They simply got up and left.
I know you're not normally a hard drinking man, my young friend, but savor the taste of the Glenlivet. It's the finest made.
Smoke read the label.
Was this stuff made in 1824?
Oh, no. That's when the distillery was founded. Old George Smith knew his business, all right.
Knew?
Yes, he died seven years ago. I was on the continent at the time.
Delicate, but mellow. Pretty good.
I had been to a rather obscure place called Monte Carlo.
Never heard of that place.
I own part of the casino.
Make lots of money?
Well, prior to that, I was enjoying the theater in Warsaw. It was there I was introduced to Madame Modjeska. It was quite the honor. She's one of the truly fine actresses in the world today.
You're talking over my head, Lewis.
Madame Modjeska.
Did you just swallow a bug, Lewis?
No, she shortened her name to Modjeska. She's here in America now, performing Shakespeare in New York, I believe. She also tours. When I finally retire, I believe I shall move to New York City. It's quite a place, Smoke. Do you have any desires at all to see it?
Nope.
Ah, pity. It really is a fascinating place. Wonderful. You should travel, Smoke. Educate yourself. Your wife is, I believe, an educated woman, is she not?
School teacher.
Ah, yes. I thought your grammar had improved since last we spoke. Most of the time. Smoke, get out while you have the time and opportunity to do so.
Nope.
Pearly was right, Smoke. There are too many against you.
I am not alone in this, Lewis. There are others.
Many of whom will not stand beside you when it gets bad. But I think you know that.
But some of them will, Lewis. And bear this in mind. We control the high country.
Well, yes, there is that. Tell me, your wife has money, correct?
Yeah, I think she's wealthy.
You think?
I told you, Lewis. I'm not that interested in great wealth. My father is lying atop thousands and thousands of dollars of gold.
And there are those who would desecrate his grave for a tenth of it.
I'm not one of them.
Smoke, it's 1878. The West is changing. The day of the gunfighter, men like you and me, is coming to a close. There's still a great rowdy element moving westward, but by and large, the people who are now coming here are demanding peace. Soon there'll be no place for men like us.
And? So?
What are you going to do then?
I'll be right out there on the Sugarloaf, Lewis. Ranching and farming and raising horses. And probably raising a family of my own.
Not if you're dead, Smoke.
The Sugarloaf is my home, Lewis. Sally and mine. And here's where we'll stay. Peacefully working the land. Or buried in it.
Smoke had made his Spartan camp some 5 miles outside of Fontana. With Drifter acting as guard, Smoke slept soundly. He had sent Pearly to his ranch earlier that night, carrying a handwritten note introducing him to Sally. Smoke didn't worry about him making any ungentlemanly advances toward Sally, because she would shoot him stone dead if he tried. Across the yard from the cabin, Smoke and Sally had built a small bunkhouse, thinking of the day when they would need extra hands. Pearlie could sleep there. After a quick bath in a rushing creek, he had started heading back toward Fontana. He turned Drifter's head slightly north of the town, planning on coming in from a different direction. It would give those people he knew would be watching him something to think about. About a half a mile from Fontana, Smoke came up on a small series of just-begun buildings. Tents lay behind the construction site. He sat his horse and looked at Preacher Mara swinging an axe. The preacher had removed his shirt and was clad only in his undershirt. Smoke's eyes took in the man's heavy musculature and the fluid way he handled the axe.
There's a whole lot more to Mara than meets the eyes, Drifter. A whole lot more.
Then Smoke's eyes began to inspect the building site. Not bad, he thought. Jackson's big store across the road, and the offices of the others in one long building on the opposite side of the road. The cabins would be behind the offices, while Jackson and his wife and brother would live in quarters behind but connected to the store. Smoke's eyes caught movement to his left.
Everything meet with your approval, Mr. Jensen?
Smoke turned Drifter toward the voice. It was Ed Jackson.
Looks good, Ed. The preacher is a pretty good hand with an axe, wouldn't you say?
Oh, him. About the only thing he's good at. He's a sissy.
If you say so.
Hunt, Colton, Haywood, and their wives walked out to where Smoke sat Drifter. He greeted the men and took his hat off to the ladies. Bountiful was not with the group, and Smoke was grateful for that. That woman was trouble. Then he wondered where the shopkeeper's brother was.
Going into town to vote, Mr. Jensen.
No point in it. One-sided race from what I hear.
Oh, no. We have several running for mayor, half a dozen running for sheriff, and two running for city judge.
Tilden Franklin's men will win, believe me.
Mr. Franklin seems like a very nice person to me. Not that I've ever met the gentleman, of course. Just from what I've heard about him.
Yeah, a real prince of a fellow. Why, just a few days ago, he was nice enough to send his boys up into the high country and burn out a small rancher's farm named Wilbur Mason. Shot Wilbur and scattered his wife and kids. He's made his boast that he'll either run me out or kill me, and then he'll have my wife. Yeah, Tilden is a sweet fellow, all right.
I don't believe that.
Smoke's eyes narrowed and his face hardened. Haywood looked at the young man and felt danger emanating from him. He instinctively put an arm around his wife's shoulder and drew her to him. Smoke's eyes bored into Ed's eyes.
Shopkeeper, I'll let that slide this one time. But let me give you a friendly piece of advice. Let me give you all some advice. You folks came here from the East. You do things differently back East. I didn't say better, just different. Out here you call a man a liar, you better be ready to do one of two things. Either stand and slug it out with him, or go strap on iron. Now you all think about that, and you'll see both the right and wrong of it. I live here. Me and my wife been here for better than 3 years. We hacked a home out of the wilderness and made it nice. We fought the hard winters, Indians a few times, and we know the folks in this area. You people, on the other hand, just came in here. You don't know nobody, yet you're gonna call me a liar. See what I mean, shopkeeper? Now, the wrong of it is this. There are bullies who take advantage of the code. Those types of trash will prod a fellow into a fight just because they think that that fight is manly or some such crap as that. Excuse my language, ladies. But the point is, you gotta watch your mouth out here. The graveyards are full of people ignorant of the ways of the West.
Well, I was just saying that from what I've heard and from what I know.
I said what I wanted to say.
Smoke turned away from Ed Jackson. There was no point in carrying on the conversation. Smoke knew that Ed wouldn't make it. Someone was either going to run him out or kill him, and mankind would have lost nothing by his passing.
Why is Franklin doing these things, Mr. Jensen?
This for your paper, Haywood?
No, I just like to know.
Because he wants to be king. Maybe he's a bit crazy, I don't know. I do know he hates farmers and small ranchers. As for me, well, I have the Sugarloaf. And he wants it.
The Sugarloaf?
My valley. Part of it, that is.
Are you suggesting the election is rigged?
No. I'm just saying that Tilden's people will win, that's all.
Has Mr. Franklin offered to buy any of the farmers' or ranchers' holdings?
Buy? Lawyer, men like Tilden don't offer to buy. They just run people out. Did cruel kings offer to buy lands they desired? No, they just took it by force.
Preacher Morrow had ceased his work with the axe and had joined the group. His eyes searched for his wife, and not finding her present, he glowered at Ed Jackson. There was bad blood between the two of them. Another strike against the shopkeeper.
Are you a Christian, Mr. Jensen?
I've been to church a few times over the years. Sally and me was married in a proper church.
Have you been baptized, sir?
In a little creek back in Missouri. Yes, sir, I was.
Ah, wonderful. Perhaps you and your wife will attend services just as soon as I get my church completed?
I knew a lay preacher back in Missouri preached on a stump, Preacher Morrow. Look around you, sir. You ever in all your life seen a more beautiful cathedral? Look at them mountains yonder. Got snow on them year-round. See them flowers scattered around? Those blue and purple ones? Those are columbines. Some folks call them dove flowers. See the trees? Pine and fir and aspen and spruce and red cedar. What's wrong with preaching right in the middle of what God created?
You're right, of course, sir. I'm humbled. You're a strange man, Mr. Jensen. And I don't mean that in an ugly way.
I didn't take it in such a way. I know what you mean. The West is a melting pot of people, preacher. Right there in that town of Fontana, there's a man named Louis Longmont. He's got degrees from places over in Europe, I think. He owns ranches, pieces of railroads, and lots of other businesses. But he follows the boom towns as a gambler. He's been decorated by kings and queens, but he's a gambler and a gunfighter. My wife lives in a cabin up in the mountains, but she's worth as much money as Tilden Franklin, probably more. She's got 2 or 3 degrees from fancy colleges back east, and she's traveled in Europe and other places, yet she married me. I know scouts for the army who used to be college professors. I know cowboys who work for 30 and found, who can stand and quote William Shakespeare for hours, and them that listen, most of them, can't even read or write. I know Negroes who fought for the North and white men who wore the gray who now work side by side and who would die for each other. Believe it.
And you, Smoke. What about you?
What about me? I raise cattle and horses and farm. I mind my own business if people will let me, and I'll harm no man who isn't set on hurting me or mine. We need people like you folks out here. We need some stability. Me and Sally are going to have kids one day, and I'd like for them to grow up around folks like you.
Smoke cut his eyes to Ed Jackson.
Most of you, that is.
The store owner caught the verbal cut broadside, and he flushed.
But for a while yet, it's going to be rough and rowdy out here. Y'all see that hill yonder? That's Boot Hill, the graveyard. See that fancy black wagon with them people walking along behind it, going up that hill? That wagon is toting a gunhawk named Atay. He braced me last night in Lewis's place. He's a mite slow.
You killed yet another man?
I've killed about 100 men, not counting Indians. I killed 20, I think, one day up on the Uncompahgre. That was in 74, I think. A year later, I put lead in another 20 or so in Idaho, a town named Bury. Bury doesn't exist no more. I burned it down. People, listen to me. Don't leave this area. Got to have some people like you to put down roots, to stay when the gold plays out. And it will, a lot sooner than most realize. We're going to need a doctor and nurse and preacher around here. Preacher for them that the doc can't patch up.
The newcomers were looking at Smoke, a mixture of emotions in their eyes. They all waited for him to speak again.
Now I'm heading into town, people, and I'm not going in looking for trouble. But I assure you all, it will come to me. And if you doubt that, come with me for an hour. Besides your axes and saws and ride with me. See for yourself.
I'll go with you. Just let me bathe in the creek first.
I'll go too.
Yes, I'd like to see more of Fontana.
I have a feeling you might need my services during the day.
I won't. Just the people who cross me, Doctor.
The men all went to their respective homes to gather some supplies. Ralph Morrow was the first one back to where Smoke stood beside Drifter.
Where's your wife, Preacher?
The man cut his eyes at Smoke. Smoke could see the faded scars above the man's eyes. A boxer, Smoke thought. He had fought many times in the ring.
Walking along the creek over there. I suppose she's safe from hostiles.
I'd think so, this close to town. Preacher, any time you want to talk, I'm available.
The man looked away, stubbornness set in his chin. Smoke said no more, and the others soon joined him. Smoke stabled Drifter with Billy and smiled at the boy. Billy was dressed in new breeches and shirt, and he had boots on his feet now.
Give him some corn, Billy.
Yes, sir. I heard that was some show last night over at Longmont's place.
Yep, he was a tad slow.
Billy grinned and led Drifter into his stall, the big outlaw stallion allowing the boy to lead him docilely.
What a magnificent animal.
Mm-hmm. Killed the last man who owned him.
The town was jammed with people, bursting at its newly sewn seams. American flags were hung and draped all over the place. Notices that Tilden Franklin was gonna speak were stuck up, it seemed, almost everywhere one looked.
Your fine man is gonna make a speech, Jackson. Sure don't want to miss that.
I shall make every attempt to attend that event.
Several of the miners who had been in Lewis's place when Tay was shot walked past Smoke, greeting him with a smile. Smoke acknowledged the greetings.
You seem to have made yourself well known in a short time, Smoke.
I imagine some of them made some money betting on the outcome of the shooting.
Barbaric!
Not much else to do out here, lawyer. Besides, you should see the crowds they gather for a hanging. Folks will come from 50 miles out for that, bringing picnic lunches and make a real pleasurable day out of it.
The lawyer refused to respond to that. He simply shook his head and looked away. The town was growing by the hour. Where once no more than 50 people lived, there now roamed some 5,000. Tents of all sizes and descriptions were going up every few minutes. Smoke looked at Ed Jackson.
I'm not trying to pry into your business, shopkeeper, so don't take it that way. But do you have any spare money for workmen?
I might. Why do you ask?
You could get your store up and running in a few days if you were to hire some people to help you. A lot of those men out there would do it for a grubstake.
A what?
A grubstake. You give them equipment and food, and they'll help you put up your building and offer you a percentage of what they take out of the ground. I think about it, all of you.
I thought you didn't care for me, Mr. Jensen.
I don't very much. But maybe it's just because we got off on the wrong foot. I'm willing to start over.
I thank you for your suggestion. I shall give you a discount on your first purchases in my store for it.
Why, thank you very much. That's right generous of you, Ed.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
The other men turned their heads to hide their smiles.
So, how do I go about doing that?
Just ask somebody. Find a man who's afoot rather than riding. Find one carrying everything on his back or pushing a cart. You'll probably get some refusals, but eventually you'll find your people.
Ed, Colton, Hunt, and Haywood walked off into the pushing, shoving hubbub of humanity, leaving Smoke and Preacher Morrow standing alone.
You don't have any spare money, Preacher?
Find me one who does have spare money. But that isn't it. I want to build as much of my church as possible myself. It's a personal thing.
I understand. I'm a pretty good hand with an axe myself. I'll give you a hand later on.
I don't understand you, Mr. Jensen.
Well, look here. Tilden Franklin, the king, has arrived.
Pearly! Come take a break and have some coffee. And I made donuts.
Bear sign? Yes, ma'am, I'm on my way.
Sally smiled at that. She had learned that cowboys would ride 100 miles for home-cooked donuts, something they called bear sign. It had taken Sally a time to learn why they were called bear sign. When Smoke finally told her the why of it, she thought it was positively disgusting.
Thanks, ma'am. Oh, these are great.
My husband must have thought a lot of you, Pearly. He's not normally a trusting person.
He's a fine man, Miss Sally. Got more cold nerve than any man I ever seen.
Can we win this fight, Pearly?
You want a straight-out, honest answer, ma'am?
That's the only way, Pearly.
It'll be tough. Right off, I'd say the odds are slim to none. But there's always a chance. All depends on how many of them Nestor friends of yours will stand and fight when it gets down to the hard rock.
A few of them will.
Yes'm. That's what I mean.
Matlock will. And so will Wilbur. I'm pretty sure Colby will stand firm. I don't know about the others.
You see, ma'am, the problem is this. Them folks you just named ain't gun hands. Mr. Tilden can mount up 200 riders. The sheriff's going to be on his side, and all them gunslinging deputies he'll name. Your husband is pure hell with a gun, pardon my language, but one man just can't do her all.
Sally smiled at that. She alone, of all those involved, knew exactly what her husband was capable of doing. But Pearlie was probably right. It would be unreasonable to expect one man to do it all, even such a man as Smoke.
What does Mr. Franklin want, Pearlie, and why?
I ain't sure of the why of it all, ma'am. As for me, I'd be satisfied with a little bitty part of what he has. He's got so much holdings, I bet he really don't know all that he has. And what does he want? He wants everything, ma'am. Everything he sees. I've overheard some of his older punchers talk about what they'd done to get them things for Tilden Franklin. I wouldn't want to say them things in front of you, ma'am. I'll just say I'm glad I didn't have no part in them. And I'm real glad Mr. Smoke gave me a job with y'all before it got too late for me.
You haven't been with the Circle TF long, then, Pearlie?
Would have been a year this fall, ma'am. Drifted down here from the Bitterroot. I kind of had a cloud hanging over me, I guess you'd say.
Would you like to talk about it?
Ain't that much to say, ma'am. I always been mighty quick with a shotgun. Not near about as quick as your man now, but tolerable quick. I was 15 and working a full man's job down in Texas. That was 5 years ago, or seven, disremember exact. Rode into town with the rest of the boys for a Saturday night spree. There were some punchers from another spread there. One of them braced me, called me names. Next thing I recall, that puncher was laying on his back with a bullet hole in his chest from my gun. Like I said, I always been mighty quick. Well, the sheriff, he told me to light a shuck. Got my back up at that, because that other puncher slapped leather first. I told the sheriff I wasn't going nowheres. I didn't mean to back that sheriff into no corner, but I reckon that's what I done. That sheriff was a bad one now. He had him a rep that was solid bad. He told me I had two choices in the matter. Ride out or die. Well, ma'am, I told him I didn't backpedal for no man. Not when I was in the right. He drew on me. I killed him. Whole place was quiet as midnight in a graveyard. Bolstered my gun and stepped out on the boardwalk. Then it hit me what I'd done. I was 15 years old and in one whale of a pickle. I just killed two men in less than 10 minutes. One of them a lawman. I was on the Hoot Owl Trail, sure as you're born. I got my horse and rode out, never once looked back. Over in New Mexico, two bounty hunters braced me outside a cantina one night. Reckon someone buried both of them the next day. Don't rightly know, seeing as how I didn't stick around for the services. Then I was up in Utah when this kid braced me. He was looking for a rep, I guess. He didn't make it. Then the kid's brothers come a-fogging after me. Put lead in both of them. One died, so I heard later on. I drifted on over into Nevada. By this time, I had bounty hunters really looking for me. I avoided them much as I could. Changed my name to Pearlie. Headed north, into the Bitterroot Range. Some lawmen came a-knocking on my cabin door one night. Said they was lawmen. What they was bounty hunters. That was a pretty good fight, I reckon. Good for me, bad for them. Then I drifted down into Colorado, and you know the rest.
Family?
None that I really remember. Ma and Pa died with the fevers when I was 8 or 9. I got a sister somewheres, but I don't rightly know where. But all I got is what you see, ma'am. I got my guns, a good saddle, and a good horse. That just about says it all, I reckon.
No, Pearlie, you're wrong.
How do you mean, Miss Sally?
You have a home with us, as long as you want to ride for the brand.
Much obliged, ma'am. I better get back on the Sugarloaf East, ma'am. Things to do.
Sally smiled, knowing she and Smoke had made yet another friend. Surprisingly, the election went smoothly. There was one central voting place where names were taken and written down in a ledger. There was no point in anyone voting more than once, and few did, for Tilden Franklin's men were lopsidedly out in front in the election count, according to the blackboard tally. By noon, it was clear that Tilden's people were so far ahead that they would not be caught. Hunt, Haywood, Colton, and Ed had voted and vanished into the surging crowds. Preacher Morrow stayed with Smoke.
You're not voting, Preacher?
No, what's the point?
You're a quick learner.
It's not Christian of me, Smoke, but I took one look at that Tilden Franklin and immediately formed an acute dislike for the man.
Like I said, quick learner.
The man is cruel and vicious.
Yes, he is. All of that and more. Insane, I believe.
That is becoming a catch-all phrase for those who have no feelings for other men's rights, Smoke.
Smoke was beginning to like the preacher more and more as time went by. He wondered about the man's past, but He wouldn't ask. That question was impolite. There were scars on the preacher's knuckles, and Smoke knew they didn't get there from thumping a Bible.
Come on, preacher. Let me introduce you to a friend of mine.
They started on their way to Lewis Longmont's when Smoke spotted Monte Carson walking the streets. A big badge was pinned to his shirt.
So Fontana's got itself a new sheriff.
Looks like it.
Smoke deliberately stayed away from the man. He knew trouble would be heading his way soon enough. There was no point in pushing it. He felt someone standing close to him and turned, looking down. It was Billy.
What's going on, Billy?
Trouble for you, Smoke.
Preacher Morrow stepped closer to hear better. Haywood and Hunt were walking toward the trio. Smoke waved them over.
Listen to what the boy has to say.
Billy looked up at the adults standing around him.
Some of the Circle TF riders is going to prod you, Smoke. Push you into a gunfight and then claim you started it. They're going to kill you, Smoke.
They're going to try.
Where did you hear this, boy?
I was up in the loft getting ready to fork hay down to the horses when the men came inside the barn. I hunkered down in the loft and listened to them talk. There's five of them, Smoke. Valentine, Suggs, Bolton, Harris, and Wright.
I've heard of Valentine. He's a gun hawk. Draws fighting wages from Franklin.
They said Mr. Franklin told him to nip this matter in the bud and end it. If you was to die, they said, the other nest would crumble like a house of cards. They said the new law was on their side, and Mr. Franklin told them they didn't have nothing to worry about from that end.
I suggest we go see the new sheriff immediately. Let him handle this matter.
I don't know who you are, mister, but you don't understand the way things are. Monte Carson is Franklin's man. Franklin says frog, Carson jumps. Judge Proctor's an old winehead from over the Dolores way. Franklin brung him in here to stick him in as judge. It's all cut and dried, all made up against Smoke.
Incredible. But I believe you, son. Activities of this sort are not confined solely to the West.
What'd he say, Smoke?
Haywood said it happens in other places, too.
Oh.
Well, if that is the case, Smoke, then you must run for your life.
I don't run, lawyer.
Well, then what are you going to do?
You've all three heard Billy's statement. A newspaper man, a lawyer, a minister. Take Billy's story down. I see a way to make Tilden Franklin eat crow on this matter and backpedal.
What are you going to do, Smoke?
Fight.
But there's five of them. Five against one of you.
I've faced tougher odds, lawyer. Where is it going down, Billy?
They're
going
to brace you in the stable.
Sounds about right. After these gentlemen take your story on paper, Billy, you get the horses out of there. I don't want to see a good horse die on account of trash like Tilden's men.
Yes, sir.
Smoke looked at the three men.
I'll be heading down that way in about an hour, boys. I would suggest you all hunt a hole.
Pearly stared at the half-dozen Circle TF riders facing him.
So, now what, boys?
You know what, Pearly.
The rider shook out a loop in his rope.
You boys is wrong. A man's got a right to ride for the brand he chooses.
You a turncoat, Pearly. You should have known that no one shows his ass in to Mr. Franklin.
He ain't God, Lefty.
Well, he is around here.
Then let him bring you back to life.
No!
Get him!
Pearly felt the loop settle around him, and then another circle of him jerked him out of the saddle. Pearly lifted his six-gun and thumbed the hammer back. He hated to do it, but he had to leave some proof of who had done this to him.
Shit! Oh! He killed my horse! Drag that son of a bitch!
The ground burned underneath. Pearly brought his head up just in time to see a rock rush up to meet him.
Bob, did you hear a shot up there a few minutes ago?
Sally entered the barn carrying a pistol, rifle, and ammunition. Bob Colby was working in the hayloft above.
Yes'm. Probably Pearly shooting the rattlers all.
Maybe. Are you armed?
Yes'm. Got a shotgun on and my rifle right down on the ground.
Get your rifle and stay in the loft. Keep a lookout for riders. I think we're in for trouble.
Yes'm.
While you're getting your rifle, close and bar all the barn doors. I'll bring Seven inside and put him in a stall.
Yes'm, Miss Sally.
We might be in for a long day, Bob. I'll bring you some water, food, and a couple of boxes of ammunition. You might have to stay out here by yourself tonight.
I ain't scared, Miss Sally. I can knock the eye out of a squirrel at 100 yards with a rifle. If anybody comes to fight, we'll stand them off.
Good boy. I'll be in the house. Let them come close. We'll catch them in the crossfire.
Yes, ma'am.
It was as if some invisible messenger had passed the word. The town of Fontana grew quiet, then hushed almost entirely. Smoke stepped into the tent of Lewis Longmont. Lewis waved him to the bar.
A pall has fallen over us, my young friend. I'm sure it concerns you. Am I correct?
Uh-huh. Some of Franklin's men are setting me up for a killing.
And naturally, you're going to leave town in a cloud of dust, right?
Sure, Lewis.
How many?
5. I'm told it's Valentine, Suggs, Bolton, Harris, and Wright.
Valentine is a bad one. I know him. He's a top gun from down near the Tex-Mex border. Watch him. He's got a border roll that's fast as lightning.
Yeah, I've heard he's good. How good?
Very good. He beat Johnny North.
But Johnny North is still alive.
Precisely.
So Valentine was cat quick, but he couldn't shoot worth a damn. Many quick-draw gun hands were blindingly fast, but usually they missed their first shots. Smoke almost never missed.
I'll back you up if you ask, Smoke.
It'll come to that, Lewis, but not yet. Speaking of Johnny North, where is he?
A question I've asked myself a few times since coming here. He'll be here, but he's a strange one, Smoke. He hates Monte Carson.
So I hear. I've never heard of him teaming up with anyone.
Lone wolf all the way. Johnny must be, about my age, I suppose. But age hasn't slowed him a bit. When do you meet these gentlemen, and where?
In about 15 minutes, down at the stables.
Anything you need?
A shotgun and a pocket full of shells.
Lewis reached over the bar and pulled out a sawed-off 12-gauge express gun. He handed Smoke a sack of shells.
I loaded these myself, full of ball bearings.
Got a taste of that scotch handy?
Always. To your unerring marksmanship.
And let's hope I shoot straight, too.
Ugh. Pearly could have sworn he opened his eyes, but he couldn't see a thing. Slowly, painfully, he lifted one hand and wiped his eyes. Now he could see, a little bit at least. He hurt all over. He wriggled his toes.
What the hell?
His boots were gone. He could feel the cool earth against his skin. His jeans were ripped and his shirt was gone too. He carefully poked at himself. He was bruised and cut and torn from head to toes, but he didn't feel any broken bones sticking out. Pearly turned his head and felt something flop down over one ear. He carefully inspected his fingertips.
Ah!
A flap of skin was torn loose. He pressed it back against his head and took his bandana from around his neck and tied it around his head.
Damn, hurts like hell.
Only then did he think of the danger he might still be in. What if the TF riders were still hanging around? He looked around him. Nothing and nobody in sight. Pearly slowly drew himself up to his knees and looked around. He could clearly see where he'd been dragged. He looked down where he had lain, a hole in the hard ground. Blood beside it. He stuck a finger into the hole and touched something hard. He dug it out and looked at it. It was a battered and mangled .44 slug.
Bastard shot me. Thought they'd killed me with a gunshot to the head. That's why the flap of skin's hanging down. Whew, damn, I'm lucky.
Pearly looked back along the torn path he'd been dragged on. It ran for a ways back toward the cabin. He could see one boot standing all alone in the mangled path. Pearly rose unsteadily to his feet and staggered back toward the boot, one solid mass of aches and pains and misery.
God damn, though, it's no good. Dirty. Go!
Pearly fell down more times than he cared to recall. He banged and bruised and battered his knees and hands each time he fell. But each time he hit the ground...
Sons of bitches!
His anger increased. He eventually found both his boots and sat down to rest, slipping them on. Now he felt a little better. He could see just barely the fallen horse of the TF man. He walked and staggered and stumbled toward it. The animal had fallen on its left side, so there was no way Pearly could get to the rifle in the saddle boot. But he could salvage the canteen full of water. His eyes swept the immediate area. He spotted his six gun.
Still good.
He ate the beef and biscuits and washed them down with water.
Now, let's find us some TF punchers.
He looked toward the direction of the ranch. It was a good 4 or 5 miles off. Pearly just started walking. He figured Miss Sally and the boy were probably in for a rough time. By God, Pearly was going to be there to help out. He put one boot in front of the other. Drops of blood marked his back trail. Smoke didn't know where all the people had gone, but the streets of Fontana were empty and silent as he walked along, keeping to the near side of the long street, advancing toward the stable. But he could feel many eyes on him as he walked. He slipped the thongs from his Colt, shifting the sawed-off Express from right hand to left. He looked toward the bat wings that had just parted. Tilden Franklin and his foreman, Clint, stepped out to stare at Smoke. The new sheriff, Monty Carson, stood beside him, his large, new, shiny badge catching the late morning rays of the sun.
We don't like troublemakers in this town, Smoke.
What trouble have I caused, Sheriff?
Man walks around carrying a shotgun like that one there you got must be looking for trouble.
Why, Sheriff? I'm just going down to the stables to see about my horse. Any law against that?
Well, no.
Thanks. If there's nothing else, I'll just be on my way.
Tilden grinned at Smoke. His mean eyes shone with evil and power.
How about you, Franklin? You got anything to say?
You talk mighty big standing there with that Express gun in your hands.
Insurance, since you're afraid to move without your trained dogs with you.
Clint's eyes narrowed and his hands balled into fists. But he knew better than to prod Smoke. The gunfighter's rep was that his temper was volatile, and that Express gun would turn all three of them into chopped meat at this distance.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. You'd rather make war against farmers and women and kids, wouldn't you?
Stand easy, Clint.
See you around, Franklin.
Smoke continued his walk down the street. Billy darted from the corral and pressed against the side of a newly erected building.
They're all over the place, Smoke. Two of them up in the loft.
Thanks. Now get out of here, Billy. On a hole.
Smoke looked toward the corral. Drifter was watching him, his ears perked up. Smoke walked to the huge open doors and paused as he removed his spurs. He knew he would be blind for a few seconds upon entering the darkened stable. Out of habit, he rechecked the loads in the Express gun.
Here we go.
Miss Sally! Hey, Miss Sally!
Bob! You see something?
Riders coming, Miss Sally.
How far off, Bob?
About a mile, ma'am. I can't make out no brand yet.
If they're Circle TF, we'll blow them out of the saddle.
Yes, ma'am.
Pearly had found Lefty's horse and gently approached the still-spooked animal.
Hey, boy.
The horse shied away. Pearly sat down on a large rock and waited, knowing that the horse would eventually come to him, desiring human company. In less than 5 minutes, the animal did come to him and shoved at the puncher with his nose.
Good boy.
Pearly petted the animal, got the reins, and swung into the saddle. Lefty's rifle was in the boot, and Pearly checked it.
Full.
Pearly pointed the animal's nose toward the ranch.
Time to get, boy. I want to get in a shot or two myself.
Yeah!
Shit! Hell with this! Let's get out of here!
The three surviving gun slicks spun their horses and lit a shuck away from the Sugarloaf Ranch. They ran right into Pearly, coming at him at full gallop. The reins were in his teeth, his right hand full of Colt and his left hand full of Henry rifle.
Shit!
The last TF rider left alive hunched low on the saddle and made it over a rise and out of range. They'd been told they were going up against Pearly and one little lady, but it seemed that Pearly was as hard to kill as a grizzly, and that little lady had turned into a bobcat.
Gah! You folks all right?
My God, Pearly! What happened to you?
They roped and drugged me, then shot me. But they made one mistake, ma'am.
What's that, Pearly?
They left me alive.
The lead tore smoking holes in the ground. Smoke darted into the darkness of the first stall. He lifted the sawed-off Express gun and waited.
Got the punk.
Maybe.
The second voice was right above Smoke. He pointed the sawed off straight up. The man was flung out of the loft, both loads catching him directly in the crotch, almost tearing him in half. As Smoke reloaded the express gun, he quietly moved to the next stall. Sheriff Monte Carson was making no efforts to interfere with the ambush. So much for the new law and order in Fontana. Smoke waited, motionless, his calloused hands gripping the express gun. One of Tilden's gun hands lost his patience. He was way off target, but Smoke wasn't.
Oh, to hell with this! Come on!
Smoke kept a bead on the shapes as they ran out of the back of the stable and disappeared. He waited for a long 10 count, then slipped out the front door. He made sure all watching him saw him reload the sawed-off shotgun. Then he walked straight up the dusty street to where Tilden and Monty were standing. He wondered where Clint had gotten off to. Well, it didn't matter. Clint might ride for a sorry no account, but the man was not a back shooter. Smoke knew that much about him.
Franklin, two of your men are on the stable floor. One is dead, and I imagine the other won't live long enough the way he's shot. Your other hands lost their nerve and ran. Maybe you told them to ambush me, maybe you didn't. I don't know, so I won't accuse you of it.
Tilden stood still, smoking a thin cigar, but his eyes were filled with silent rage and hate.
You got anything you want to say to me, Sheriff?
I reckon not.
Fine. See you around, Franklin.
Smoke knew that the man despised being called by his last name. Smoke turned and walked to Lewis Longmont's place. He handed Lewis the shotgun and walked across the street to join the Easterners.
Go get my horses, Billy, and stay out of the barn until someone cleans up the mess.
Yes, sir.
Is that it?
That's it, lawyer. Out here for the time being, justice is very swift and short.
Smoke looked at Ed Jackson.
I'd suggest you bear that in mind.
Later that same day, Tilden sat at a table in a saloon by himself. The Kingpin Rancher was in a blue funk and everybody knew it, so they wisely left him alone. Those 6 gun hands he'd sent to ambush Jensen were among the best he'd had on his payroll, and they'd failed. And to make matters worse, Jensen had made Tilden look like a fool in front of Monty and countless others who were hiding nearby.
Intolerable.
Tilden glanced down at his bottle, more than half empty. That, too, struck him as intolerable. And Tilden was not a heavy-drinking man, not a man who liked his thoughts muddled. He looked up as one of his punchers, he couldn't remember the man's name, and that irritated him even further, entered the saloon and walked quickly up to Clint, whispering in the foreman's ear. The foreman stiffened and gave the man a dark look, then cut his eyes to Tilden. Tilden Franklin rose from the table and walked to Clint and the cowboy
outside.
In the shade offered by the awning, the men stood on the boardwalk.
Say it.
Lefty and 5 others went over to the Sugarloaf to drag Pearly. Only one come back, and he was shot up pretty bad. He said they drug Pearly a pretty fair distance and then shot him in the head. But he ain't dead, boss. And they was 2 people at Jensen's spread. Both of them trigger pullers.
Son of a bitch.
And that ain't all, boss. Arthur was over to our western range driving the beeves back to the lower slopes. He seen a campfire, smelled beans cooking. Billy taking off over there to run whoever it was off the range. When he got there, he changed his mind. It was Charlie Starr.
Charlie Starr. Last word I heard of him was 5-6 years back. News was he was killed in a gunfight up in Montana.
Arthur seen Charlie over in Nevada at Mormon Station 7-8 years ago. That's when Charlie killed them 4 gun slicks. Arthur bought Charlie a drink after that, and they talked for nearabouts an hour. You heard Arthur brag about that, boss. It ain't likely he'd forget Charlie Starr.
Tilden nodded his head in agreement. It was not very likely. Charlie Starr, mean as a snake and just as notional as a grizzly bear, wore 2 guns tied down low, and he was just as good with one as the other. Charlie had been a number of things: stagecoach guard, deputy, marshal, gambler, outlaw, gunfighter, bounty hunter, and miner, and a lot of other things besides those.
Yeah, well, he's got to be close to 50 years old by now, but I doubt that age has slowed him down much, if at all.
And Charlie Starr hated Tilden Franklin.
Tilden, you don't think...
I don't know, Clint. Thanks, Donnie. Here, get yourself a drink.
Thanks, Mr. Tilden, sir.
Oh, that was more than 15 years ago, Clint. 17 years, to be exact. I was 23 years old and just full of piss and vinegar. I didn't know that woman belonged to Charlie Starr. God damn it, she didn't tell me she did. Rubbing me all over, tickling my ear. I just ramrodded a herd up from Texas. I was hard drinking back then. I mean, I got drunk, Clint. I told you that much before. And what I haven't told you was that I got a little bit rough with a woman later on. She died. I mean, I thought she liked it rough. Lots of women do, you know. Anyway, I got the word that Charlie Starr was gunning for me, so I ordered my boys to rope him and drag the meanness out of him. And they got a little carried away with the fun, and they hurt him bad. He was a long time recovering from it. Better part of a year. Word got back to me over the years that Charlie had made his brag he was gonna brace me and kill me.
I seen him up on the Roaring Fork 9-10 years ago. Luis Chamba and that medicine boat Gunslick braced him. Chamba took a lot of lead, but he lived. The other one didn't.
Where is Chamba?
Utah, last I heard.
Send a rider. Get him.